Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Celebrating 50 years of service in Tuscaloosa and West Alabama, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. At Townsend Honda, with new cars in short supply, they've purchased more than 200 quality pre-owned vehicles. And every one of them goes through a 118-point inspection before it's offered for sale to you. Most of those vehicles are either Honda certified pre-owned or Townsend certified pre-owned, and the dealership also has a fully staffed parts and service department to assist you beyond the purchase day throughout the life of your vehicle. That includes Saturday service, which is available until 1 p.m., even during football season. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Honda salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. This time of year, it feels like everything is speeding up. The kids are back in school, the holidays are around the corner, and I don't know about you, but it feels like everyone is back from vacation and emailing me. But author and mixologist Mike Wolf is asking us to slow down. Take the time to make a proper drink, and in the process, get to know our garden, our friends, and our family traditions a little better. You might recognize his face from past stints at Husk Nashville, or most recently, Audrey. Or his voice from Liquid Gold, a podcast he hosts with a fun menagerie of friends and industry vets. He's the author of Garden to Glass, Bar and Teened, and the upcoming Cheer. And his drinks have been featured in numerous publications from Imbibe magazine to The Tennessean. So, let's take his advice and drink in the season as fall begins to tease us with slightly cooler mornings and burnt umber beginnings on the dogwood leaves. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Mike Wolf.
Thank you so much for having me. This is amazing.
It's amazing to talk to you. Happy 100th episode. I've enjoyed more than a few of yours. Liquid Gold is crushing
it. Thank you so much. Yeah, we're having a good time.
Well, honestly, 100 is a lot. It's a grind, right?
It really is. I mean, I figured early on when we were on episode 8, you know, I was like, we're going to run out of stuff to talk about. We're going to run out of drinks. And even, you know, going through like, well, we've gone through 3 holiday seasons or so, and you don't mm-hmm. really run out. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah, there's something to talk about. You know, I've always admired your work. I first found out about Garden to Glass when it was published years ago, and it's on my bookshelf. It was so fun to have yet another excuse to pull it out and flip through it and prep for this interview. I think of you as a very particular kind of bartender in the fact that you're a lot more of an alchemist, you know? And I'm interested in if you can explain creatively how you started making that connection to ingredient like a chef would when a lot of mixologists weren't there yet. Bartenders weren't there yet.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was when I started experimenting, making with like tinctures and trying to like extract, using alcohol to like extract the flavor and the aromatic properties like of, say, cinnamon, or trying to make like a mint tincture, you know, stuff like that, that where you could like, oh, I'll put a few drops on top of a mojito and it'll be, you know, it'll be this next level mojito, just being a nerd. And then as you just keep going down the rabbit hole of ingredients and, you know, like, well, this blackberry that I got at Kroger that I, you know, like we ran out of blackberries. So I went over to Kroger to get some and we can get through the shift. You know, that next July comes around and you're like, we really should get some local blackberries, see what those are like. And then you're just blown away by that. And then you, you start talking about peaches and you're like, well, the Georgia peach, I'm going to get in trouble by saying this, but you know, the Georgia peaches, they're great. They're great every year, but South Carolina peaches, whoa, those are a whole different
thing. That's right.
And so, yeah, you just,
it's a different game. Yeah, it's a different game.
You never, and then Tennessee strawberries, that sort of like blew me away when I really started to make that connection, how special the strawberries were in Tennessee and what was different about those tasty notes. And yeah, it was really just becoming kind of obsessed about ingredients and seasons and when things are at their peak and sourcing and, you know, trying to find like what's the most aromatic cinnamon that I can find. And I think it's just born out of passion, I think.
Were you one of those kids that like played with microscope sets and did all the science stuff?
I was a science nerd as a kid. Yeah, so. I was just into like the test tubes and the visuals of it. I really, once it got down to, when I was in high school and I was taking like chemistry classes and stuff, and I was just like, I don't know, this seems like a lot of math. When do we play with the liquids? When do we blow stuff up?
Well, yeah, and you're always lighting things on fire at a bar, right? You know, flambé. Definitely. And, you know, one of the coolest party tricks is to flame an orange peel, right?
Definitely. I mean, when you can get that down, you can impress some people for sure.
Did you have a family member who was a gardener? Because you've really had to go into the botanical world as well in order to do the chemistry world, you know? By the way, you're doing lots of math all the time when you're making cocktails.
That's
right?
True. It's true. It's pretty easy math for the most part. But yeah, it's my kind of math. My grandma was a great gardener. And actually growing up, my neighbor, Miss Paletti, she had this amazing garden and was like composting and taking the leaves at the end of the year. And she led a really interesting life. And so I did have it around. It wasn't a huge thing at my house necessarily. We gardened for, you know, having beautiful flowers and things like that. I definitely turned a light on when I started to just like try to grow a few things. And then you realize cucumbers are easy to grow, but then you get to experience like what a cucumber flower is like. And discovering like the beauties of like cucumber flowers and squash blossoms and how that's just like a whole thing. Yeah, it just connects you to that whole world in such a different way.
And that's really what this podcast has done for me. I started a rabbit hole doing this, you know. I wasn't thinking about pepper, you know, banana pepper flowers when I started the podcast in 2016. And I know now that you've written multiple books, and your newest one is not out yet, but I got the chance to have a preview, and it's called Cheer, just simply holiday stuff, right?
Yeah. So it was, so my second book after Garden to Glass was going to be, I was going out on book tour, not on like one long like trek, but I was going to be doing like popping away for weekends. And I had all these events scheduled. And then the book I was going to do was Liquid Gold, the second golden age of the cocktail, the second golden age of like drinking in America. And I was going to talk to cider brewers and distilleries and people that are making Fernet, people that are making Campari, people that were just doing all these amazing things. And when the pandemic hit, that book, you know, I had to call my publisher and just be like, this book makes no sense. But I had like a 3-chapter in my outline, and I had worked on it a little bit, especially during that holiday season of 2019. I had a section that was like all about the holidays, going from like Halloween, I would say, through Thanksgiving. I had a bunch of Thanksgiving stuff, a bunch of Christmas stuff, New Year's. It's like a 3-chapter section. I started to pan out a little bit and realize there was so much to those holidays. And then the first chill in the air, like I call it in the book, which is right. Like, it's always like, it's whiskey drinking time. It's time to have an old fashioned, time to have a Manhattan. And then I got into the seasonality of that early autumn and started thinking about persimmon and pawpaws and all these things. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, I've got a book here. Sure, it's a holiday mm-hmm. book. In looking at other holiday books since I finished this, because I didn't want to look at any really while I was working on it. I was trying to plunge ahead and do something as unique as I could. When I looked at other holiday books after finishing this, I realized that this one's very in depth to me, I think. And it's very like personal and
it is. It's very beautiful. It's very rooted mm-hmm. in place. You're based in Nashville, and so that you do experience all four of the seasons, and so that chill in the air is a real thing.
Definitely.
Sometimes in the other parts of the South, it isn't.
For sure.
But going back to that idea of the first chill in the air, that really gets to something that is at the heart of the kind of work that you do, and that's the idea of the micro season. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't really thought so much about shoulder seasons until the last few years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the pandemic that really helped me slow down, but that idea of after Labor Day, but before it gets cool kind mm-hmm. of thing, that last of the, like I just wrote a recipe, got a recipe published for green tomato chow chow. That's like a super late summer shoulder season kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But the first chill in the air, that's anticipation for the holidays that are to come. You know, that's campfire
Definitely.
And s'mores and all of that kind of thing. And you have one in there. It's called the Lincoln County Cocktail, and it's using Tennessee whiskey by another Southern Fort guest, Charlie Nelson.
Yeah, right? Charlie's great. We had an amazing time having him on the show. You know, it was a couple years ago, but I've known him for a while. He was a semi-regular of mine at another bar I worked at where he lived behind the bar, basically. So he could walk through the alley and come over to the old Rumors East. He's just amazing to talk to. His whole family story is obviously fascinating, but he's just got a great mm-hmm. perspective on, like, just whiskey and the traditions of it. That's really, really unique. Mm-hmm.
So developing a cocktail that was really inspired by him and also that time of the year, you know, you did a smoked maple syrup. Maple and bourbon or maple and whiskey is a really classic combo.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorites. And I feel like it's probably in the like hardcore mixology world, it's a little bit like, oh, that's a little simple or that's a little basic. But like, that's a lot of what this book is just like accessible and warming and inviting. And that's like what kind of, I call it drinking season, that starts with like the first chill in the air mm-hmm. and goes through January. That's kind of what it's about, you know, is like familiar flavors, warming flavors. And there's just nothing better than like a little maple syrup and whiskey.
Well, and you are in the avant-garde world of cocktails. I mean, you just finished up a tenure at Audrey, and I mean, that's pretty edgy. And a lot of the stuff that you do, I mean, sometimes I'm like, whoa, I think in Garden to Glass, there was a dill sour, and that was what, 7 years ago
yeah.
or something?
Oh,
like
yeah. That one
I
was
mean,
a trip.
It's been a while. Mm-hmm. That was edgy back then, right?
Definitely, definitely. It was like,
so
people are like, what am I sipping the drink from? It's like, it's a dill straw. And it's like, whoa, what?
Yeah, like using that hollow dill stem,
totally.
Right? To be the straw.
Yeah,
that's super interesting, super fun. And these are familiar flavors in Cheer, and familiar flavors in Garden to Glass, because they come from, you know, the garden and barn. What is the other book called?
Barn-teened, yeah, which was my pandemic home bar book.
Yeah, Barn-teened, yeah.
Yep.
Home bar book, which is, we all got really interested in making home bars because we needed them.
Yep.
But it still takes an amount of effort to do a dill straw, to do a smoked maple syrup. What about the ritual of making a cocktail, of making the ingredients to have in your pantry to make cocktails? What about that attracts you?
Oh, I mean, I do love ritual. I think the pandemic aided that a little bit too, because before the pandemic, I wasn't necessarily like a make a cocktail at home guy. It was more if I was having people over or families coming over, and it was just like, well, Mike's going to make a drink. It's like, Mike, you're making a drink, right? And it's like, yeah, what do you want? but during the pandemic, it became like the martini, or when it was nice out, we would do like margaritas or palomas, nothing too fancy, but like the ritual of it, we really came to enjoy and appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way to like learn the little details of making cocktails. Like if you're going to make your own margaritas at home, you definitely need to be like juicing your limes, but you'll notice like not every lime's the same, and some limes are a little bit different. So some right. days you might want to have a full ounce of lime juice in there. Some days it might taste better where it's like a little bit more like 3/4 ounce or 1/2 ounce. And so going through the rituals of making like the familiar drinks or the drinks that you love, and even just if you want to experiment, like in Cheer, we talk about experimenting with prickly pear, which is like a really amazing flavor and a very common flavor because it's very easy to find here mm-hmm. in the States.
And a beautiful color.
It's a beautiful color. It will stain whatever it touches, so you do have to be a little bit careful. But, you know, even if you're experimenting with prickly pear, say, or you're just making a regular margarita, you start to notice how all the details interact, and you really start to notice balance, and, you know, you'll taste it and be like, oh, that isn't sweet enough. I need to add a little bit more agave. And that's something we talk about on Liquid Gold too, is like you can always add a little bit more sweetness. It can be hard to like take sweetness away. But those are all those little details that you mm-hmm. learn when you like go through that kind of ritual of making something from scratch.
You bring up a really good point about repeating some of the drinks, you know, like you're making a Paloma multiple times throughout the warm months. Mm-hmm. So you're really getting comfortable with the preparation, with the method, and then you're able to play from there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people in cooking and in making cocktails and mixology, it's too complicated. They get overwhelmed and they go right back to Jack and Coke.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
One other aspect of what you do is you create so many different tinctures and serums. I'm using that from skincare world, but
oh, yeah.
You know, shrubs and cordials mm-hmm. and syrups. How do you know which ones should be which? Like, how do you know that should be a syrup versus that should be a cordial?
I think it's just really getting into the ingredients and really letting those ingredients kind of speak to you a little bit. Peaches mm-hmm. are great for shrubs to me because the vinegar really helps to like kind of preserve that flavor and develop that flavor over time. Peaches are obviously great with like mm-hmm. a little bit of acid to them, even like say like a simple like peach lemonade, or if you made a lemonade and steep peaches in it for a couple days. And so it's like letting those ingredients speak to you. Like I think blueberry is a really interesting ingredient that I was thinking about a lot this summer, because blueberries can be hard to get the flavor from
yeah.
without just, it's like the way to experience a blueberry is just to eat it. And it's tough
right.
to get
and
them
they,
into a drink
I'm,
and make it kind of work.
Yeah, because it takes over a drink mm-hmm. to me, and I'm going to avoid blueberry.
Yeah, it's really hard.
In a cocktail.
It's really hard to like recreate yeah. that feeling of like biting into the blueberry where you get the sweetness once you've bitten into it and the juiciness and maybe a little bit of acid. And then the tannin mixes with that as you're chewing it. So I went through a lot of that this summer really thinking about that. How could I make something that by the time I'm done, it would taste like liquid blueberry? And it's difficult. And mm-hmm. so it's like each ingredient is super unique. And it's like with spices, the difference between, I think, like doing something amazing with spices and doing something just okay is like, did you toast your spices? Did you toast them slowly? Did you not over toast them? So it's like really just like thinking about those ingredients.
Which is me. Always me. I'm always over toasting.
Shake the pan. Shake that pan around.
Yeah, but my grandmother said, you always cook everything on high. You need to turn it down.
That's funny.
That's what she said. You know, just give
That's
it a
good
moment.
Lesson, yeah.
But I do. Yeah, I basically cook. I cook life on high for
I like
sure.
That.
And
you like a good sear.
Too. Yeah. So I do. I'm all about the sear, medium rare inside.
Yeah.
All of this is talking about slowing down, right?
Sure.
Taking that ritual, taking that time, looking at that. And a lot of people have slowed down to the point they're really attracted to zero proof cocktails. That category has exploded. And that's really the cutting edge of creativity right now, I would say, in American bartending. What about
you? Yes, I would say that. It was kind of amazing when I had taken, I guess it was almost about a year and a half off from bartending during the pandemic and stuff. And I was like parent in chief, didn't leave my house a whole lot. And when I, you know, when I got back into it and I was working at Audrey and stuff, it was just amazing to see that there was a change in the customer. There was a change in, or there was a change in like what the guest was looking for. There was a change a little bit in the guest expectations of how a zero proof drink should be and what was expected of bartenders. And it was kind of amazing for me to see, like, I did it at Husk for years and we were, I think, way ahead of the game where we had 5 non-alcoholic drinks on our menu probably after being open like 6 months. That would have been back in 2013. But I have to say, looking back, like it was really, we only made those occasionally. We didn't make them a ton. So it's been interesting to see over the course of almost 10 years, like it's such a thing now. It's, you have to be able to do it. It's more difficult to make like something that's as good as a margarita without tequila. It's just difficult. And so it's a fun challenge. It's a fun way to focus on ingredients and to really work on your craft and see like what you can do without leaning on a really nice gin or a really nice tequila or, you know, so it's been a challenge.
Right.
It's
which is going to have a lot of complexity. Mm-hmm. Right. And gone are the days of even calling them mocktails.
Right.
And I love that. And I also love that this is really grounded in hospitality. It is about welcoming everybody to enjoy a beverage and to not, you know, be an afterthought. And that can really translate even to home entertaining to make sure that you have non-alcoholic, zero proof, at least an option.
Yeah.
Or two,
yeah. I think that, the non-alcoholic wine scene is interesting. You know, it's very new. So there's a lot of just okay ones out there. Honestly, I've tasted a lot of them over the last 6 months or so, but they're getting there. And, the ones that I really started to love was all the stuff from Lights. They're a German company, but they make these beautiful non-alcoholic wines. And I think that, you know, you talk about ritual and I think that's what people, they don't want to necessarily lose that. They don't want to totally do away with like having a glass of wine with dinner. But maybe if it's non-alcoholic, that's much better for their lifestyle. So it's been really interesting for me to see because it seems like in the last year, it's like that's very important. And it's like, it's not just like important to the industry or the business. It's important to the guest. And that's been really interesting to see. So I've had to change my thinking a little bit in certain areas to be like, this is a thing and we got to be ready for it.
Well, you've been doing a lot of thinking. You're working on another book. I'd say more power to you. It's, you have to go all the way in, right? And then kind of write yourself out.
Definitely.
And I know how that feels. And I think you're like all the way in, but not quite written yourself out yet. You are really going to be focused on promoting this book this year as the holidays happen. Mike, what's making you hungry?
Ooh.
What are you interested in beyond this?
Wow. Yeah, I think just like connection and part of why I think this book is coming, why Cheer is coming at such a great time is because it really is time for people to like reconnect a little bit, and for families to reconnect a little bit. And it does feel like to me that starting with maybe last spring or this summer, I don't know when most people got like super comfortable to be back out and doing things, but it seems like it's getting to be in full swing. And so, yeah, I just feel like really inspired when I'm out now. And I was not, you know, I'm not like someone who goes out a lot or, you know, goes out to the bars a whole lot or anything like that. But when I am out, I do see this like energy to everything. And it's really interesting to see coming out of the pandemic. And I really have no idea where we're headed. So that's pretty, right. Pretty interesting and inspiring to me.
I think a lot of people feel that way as well.
Yeah.
But they might not feel as inspired. There's fear too, but there's a lot of inspiration. So what's one aspect of this job, and I touched on it, like that really meshes with a natural aspect of your personality? I wondered if you were a, you know, tiny kid chemist. So is there an aspect of all of this that really is part of you?
I think it is just the creativity of it. I've always been creative. I've written songs and written poetry and written all kinds of things. I have two fiction short stories in this new book. So that's something I want to keep pursuing and doing. I'm going to do a novel at some point here soon. And I think it's just the creativity of it. And something I realized that if I'm like looking back on things I've done over the last 10 years is I haven't had to like go back to classics that I've made or like some of my favorite drinks. Like, let's go back to that. Like, I feel like I'm always trying to push ahead and do something new and do something different. And this world of like making drinks and cooking and the whole world of food and drink and growing things and foraging for things, you just can never stop like creating and doing new things. So that's definitely a big part of who I am.
I call it, in my world, compulsive behavior.
Yeah.
People are like, why don't you take a week off? And I'm like, I can't. I don't know how to do that. So, it's just there's, you'll never get it done. You know, you'll never explore enough. You'll never try the combos enough. And that there's something super fun and expansive and relaxing about that. You know?
Yeah. I think I thought at some point, maybe when I started having kids, we started having kids 9 years ago or so. It's like, I can see myself. I'm going to slow down and I'm going to chill out and I'm going to grill burgers and I'm going to sit on the porch and do nothing. But it's like, it didn't really happen. I still feel like just, you know, a mad rush to do things and a mad rush to go places. So I still feel it in this age I'm in now. Thought I would like kind of settle down and chill out, but I don't think I have. So I don't know that I will.
No, everyone always says to me, you have such a calm voice, but no one has ever called me calm. they have never said, you're chill. There's one that's ever going to mistakenly think I'm chill, ever. I'm just not. So I get you for sure. And I think that's what makes it fun. You know, you're always kind of building, creating, percolating, thinking, you know?
Definitely.
So there's always something to do. What's one thing that's keeping you up at night, quick fire?
Probably the state of this country. Yeah, like I wasn't sure. I don't know if this is like too heavy for the show. But I wasn't I wasn't sure I'd get to the point where I was like, I don't want to be an American anymore. You know, or like, where am I going to live later in life? Where am I going to go? And so that's some of that keeps me up a little bit, because it's just like, I need to go live somewhere else.
Yeah.
We're having those discussions. It's not like nothing soon, but it's definitely we started having those discussions.
And that is heavy. That's a real thing. And I think a lot of people have felt that way, you know? So any question, should I stay and try to work on things? And
definitely,
or do I need to go? And going, you get a different perspective. You know, staying, you dig in and commit, but you know.
And I think that we're balancing that, and we've got friends, you know, like some of our kids' friends and people that we talk to that are like, you know, well, we got to do, we're here now, we got to do, you know, and make it the best that we can, and we got to get involved and things like that. So I think it's just a balance of that. Yeah, when if it's keeping me up at night, I'm like, I got to get out of here.
Getcha. Well, I'm glad you're here now, because that means that I get to ask you the question that I reserve just for Southern Fork guests, and that is, I would like to bring you a magic picnic basket. This Whoa. Is my version of a dream meal. And in our industry, we joke a lot about the death row meal. But since I don't believe in the death penalty, I didn't want to keep asking that damn question.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring you some things that would bring you life. So with this, I can time travel. I can go back and ask anybody to make one more bite of something that you would just love to have again. I can source for you, although you are a king of sourcing. So I'll really, really have to reach deep into my coffers for you. And then I can cook a little bit. So I'd love to bring you some of your favorite things. They don't have to be a formal picnic. They don't have to go together. Mm. What can I put in the basket for you?
Whoa. One of my favorite, if I'm thinking like a dream picnic, it would be like sides that were really like well made, you know, maybe like a really good potato salad or any kind of like, you know, a fennel slaw or a good slaw, you know, nothing too fancy or anything, but like sides that were homemade. I always loved that. But then like the chicken I would get from Popeyes.
Do you like spicy or regular?
Both. It probably depends on like when's the last time I had to take heartburn or do I have any on me?
Well, I can put a Pepcid in there for you.
Yeah,
that's fine. I can make that happen.
Pepcid infused rosé.
That might really change the flavor, the palate, but
that chunky finish. There.
I know. I mean, like, what was it? Karen on Will and Grace would do baby aspirin martinis. Do you remember that? Did you ever see that show?
That's great. Yes.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Baby aspirin. Yeah, she is amazing.
That's hilarious.
Okay. So Popeye's chicken. It's not the first time I've built a basket around that. All right. Are there any desserts? Do you have a sweet tooth?
I don't much, but I am a sucker for like chocolate chess pie. If there's like a chocolate chess pie, my wife makes it sometimes for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And if I'm ever at Arnold's, I know you know Arnold's. That's one of the only places I'll get dessert. So yeah, love a good chocolate chess pie.
Yeah, well, Arnold's desserts don't really count toward calories. They're just perfection. You got to get it.
I don't know how many people I've told about Arnold's, like back at the Husk Bar when people would come from out of town and they'd be like, where should I go eat? I don't know where to go eat. And I'm like, well, have you ever heard of Arnold's? You should probably go because, you know, we're just 5 minutes away. It's right over here. You should go. And it's not, people will tell you it's a meat and three, but it's actually a meat and seven. So you want to get as many sides on your tray as possible. And that's how you do Arnold's.
That's right. You don't want to go too late at night because you'll need that Pepcid maybe, but you definitely want to make it the centerpiece meal, almost like a Sunday dinner,
definitely.
You know, and then you don't really need that dinner.
That's something else I used to tell supper. People too. It was like, don't have breakfast if you're going to Arnold's. Just save it.
Well, on that note, if people want to learn more about Mike Wolf and his really, really beautifully crafted cocktails that you can also make from his books. And he has co-authors too, including my friend, Miss Backus, Jessica. So you can go to thesouthernfork.com. I'm going to have links there as well as images so you can see the face behind the voice. It is a really good voice. I would like to call it a radio voice. And that's because he has his own on-demand radio show called a podcast. I'll have links there to that as well. I'm a subscriber, and I would suggest that if you want to learn more about the world of cocktails, beverages, wine, all things, and learn some new combinations for how to use profanity when talking about them, right, Mike?
Yeah, we've used some profanity on the show here and there.
I love it. I love it.
Kenneth,
actually,
Kenneth can cuss. Really well too.
Yeah.
So I got to give him a
Jody.
Shout out.
Jody was top tier. Oh, yeah. Was top tier.
That was one of my favorite things to tell Jody right before we started recording. She was like looking around. She was like, can we cuss? Can we cuss? And I was like, Jody, we can cuss.
Jody was like, I'm on it.
Yeah,
Jody like, and oh, I great. Go way back. So yeah, it's a small world. So we won't bore listeners with that. But of course, there are almost 300 other episodes in the archives and lots also about cocktails and spirits, beer and wine. So make sure and check that out. Mike, thank you. Thank you so much for your time in the middle of, I know, a busy day.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me and really appreciate and love the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello and welcome to Talking with My Mouthful. I have tried a variety of cocktails with a variety of spirits and without spirits throughout the years, and I'm always open to trying another one. But you know, as you taste and try things, you do develop your own palate, and I have to admit that summer is more of my cocktail palate. I am really into tequila and gin cocktails, and I have enjoyed flavors of cucumber and basil and all the citrus, everything bright and kind of bubbly and spritzy when it's hot outside. And when it turns to fall, which we are right on the edge of, and some of you are already experiencing it, depending on where you're listening to this. Of course, I do enjoy whiskey and bourbon, and I know a lot about those spirits and have written about them, but I'm more akin to drinking a bourbon on the rock, just like a nice big ice cube, than a mixed cocktail. However, there is a cocktail that is in my coffer that is perfect for this exact micro season, as Mike Wolf says, or at least in my opinion, and that is the Negroni, a classic gin cocktail from Italy, made with bitter Campari, and it actually is Negroni week this week. Now, I'm not really big into all of these, you know, National Pancake Day, National Chocolate Sprinkles Day, National, I don't know, whatever. I get all these emails. This is not like that. It is not a marketing ploy and to build up Negronis. It is more to raise money. In 2013, Imbibe magazine launched Negroni Week, and they use it to raise money for charitable causes around the world. They started with about 120 bars, and now there are thousands of venues worldwide, and they've raised millions of dollars. So chances are, especially if you have a wonderful craft cocktail bar that you enjoy frequenting, they either know about Negroni Week or might even participate. And if you haven't had this really classic, beautiful cocktail, it's a wonderful time to try one for the first time. A lot of bars and restaurants do very specific variations on the Negroni. There's a lot of riffs. That's really what it's called in cocktail world, is a riff on a classic like Negroni or a martini or an old fashioned. And so they do a lot of very inventive Negroni riffs, and they are raising money for causes that are close to their heart. So if you feel thirsty for a craft cocktail this week, please consider checking out the Negroni at your local watering hole. It's a perfect shoulder season cocktail. I mean, in my opinion. Until I chat with you again next time, cheers. You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?